Hey everybody, welcome to episode 6 of GRCast. I'm Joe Ryan, your host, and I'm joined in the studio this week by Matt Graucott.
Hello.
And Charles Battersby.
Hello.
Another exciting week for games, gentlemen. Sort of, right? Something must have happened.
There was that.
Something's always happening in the magical world of video games.
Bethesda, was that this week that they announced that big survival horror game? You guys seen that?
Is that the one with Shinji Mikami?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, that guy. As though he's not like the father of modern horror games. Shame on you.
Shame on him. Have you seen the state of modern horror games?
Well, fair enough. All right, we're going to kick it off as we typically do with what you've been playing. Who wants it first? Why don't you go ahead, Matt?
Okay, I've mostly been playing two games this week. I finished Bioshock 2.
Woo!
Yeah.
Nice.
You know, it's got a lot of bad press, and I think that's basically down to the first two or three levels, which were quite slow, but it got quite good towards the end there. There was a hell of a lot of glitches, and some of the controls didn't work the way they were supposed to, but all in all, it was a pretty good game. There was things about it that was better than the first, and there was things about it that was worse than the first, but all in all, it deserved the odd bit of praise that it got. Although I say that, I think it got like a 92 on Metacritic or something.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's just not as good as the first one, so people interpret that as, oh, it has no right to exist.
You know, though, I saw a news story yesterday from just before the game came out, and it seems that they changed a lot in the last few months, or at least in the run-up to release. They announced that they'd changed things, like there was originally only going to be a single big sister, and it just chased you around the place, and they changed that so that it was a pretty common enemy. And people thought that was it, it was just going to be a reskin of the first game because there was already Big Daddies and now there's Big Sisters. And I do wonder how much of it they kind of built up in their own mind as, oh my god, this is going to be the best game ever. And then in the last few months, they kind of started getting more and more disappointed.
The hype machine.
And the first few levels were pretty dull, to be fair. I liked that you could... It was a different view of Rapture. And I liked that. But, yeah, I'm glad I played it. There's less fuss about it than the first one, so I think I kind of... I went in with lower expectations, perhaps.
I got excited about this, Charles, the other day, because he tells me, oh, I finished Bioshock 2. I said, oh, thank God, now you can play Bioshock Infinite. You can be part of the modern day. He goes, no, I have to play Cameo, Elements of Power now.
Not just a random game, though. I'm doing it for Steve, the composer, just released all his kind of demos and everything of the soundtrack, and I'm writing an article on it. So it's not like it's just random. I have had that game since it came out and I hardly touched it, but it isn't just my uselessness that has made me play it.
Well, make sure you get Blinks the Time Sweeper as well.
Yeah, I think that's another that I might actually have. And I've never played.
I'm kidding!
On top of that, I've just started Walking Dead Survival Instinct.
Have you really?
And how is that?
It is interesting. You know, I have no idea what's happened over the last kind of 10 years, because the last time I was playing kind of tie-in games regularly, I went in expecting them to be crap. You went in, there would be bad voice actors, there'd be bad impressions. I think the last one that I played was Lost via Domus or whatever it was called, and like it had nothing to do with the story. None of the voice actors from the TV show came into it. The graphics were terrible, and that's exactly what I expected from any Walking Dead game. You know, I went in expecting the characters from the TV shows and the ability to kill zombies, and that's it. And this game completely, it nails that. It's just a shame that everything else is terrible. But I was expecting that as well.
But at least you get the authentic Merle and Daryl experience.
Yeah. I could have done without that.
That game does just what Daryl and Merle would do if they had their own show together. They barely talk, they creep around, and they stab zombies in the head. Sometimes through the top of the head, sometimes through the jaw, that you never know what's going to happen.
Sometimes you'll stand behind and say, hold R1 to execute, and you'll hold R1, and then you'll just get hit lots of times and die. There's a huge option. There's a huge variety of choice with the execution.
One of my favorite things.
The next Walking Dead game will be
good.
Hopefully, the next Walking Dead game will be Carl and Laurie walking around as mother and son.
It's a giant escort quest.
Not so
where
much killing.
Carl
zombies.
Has to kill everyone.
Yeah, well, or not even killing zombies. It's just him trying to have fun and her being a nag all the time.
Sneak away from your mom to play with a frog by the pond.
And somehow it still doesn't sound like it'd be worse than Survivalist.
My favorite thing about Survival Instinct is when you walk up to a zombie. Like, if you execute them all the time, it's fine. It's a stealth game. It's kind of boring, but if you're a big Walking Dead fan, then fine. But, like, when they notice you and you have to fight them, it's absurd because they just walk up to you and you sort of swing your knife at the air and they move their head slightly to the left as though they've been lightly slapped on the cheek, and then after about four or five of those, they just fall over.
There is so much wrong with this game. Like, in one of the early levels, there's like a little side cupboard. Or maybe a little office, perhaps, very, very small. And you go in and there's one zombie there, and he gets up and you stab him in the head. And then you leave the office and then you look again and the zombie's just disappeared. You've took maybe three steps and they haven't even bothered to keep the body around long enough for that. It's ridiculous.
That was a game you very much had to play at the right time. Like, you had to be super in Walking Dead mode, very excited for the TV show, like a big Daryl fan, and like three episodes from the end of season three when the hype was boiling hot.
But you know, for that, I mean, it's definitely a Walking Dead game. They've got the feel of it pretty well. I mean, I've not come to a point yet where I've felt, okay, there's seven zombies over there, I can take them. And I think that captures the TV series pretty well.
Yeah, I think it might be the first game I had ever played short of maybe Red Dead's Undead mode, where you actually have to hit them in the head or it just does nothing. But it's just so boring to hit them in the head when it's not an execution. And they just go, ragdoll.
The people listening don't realize that you did the voice for all the zombies in that game.
Well, Left 4 Dead had a hardcore mode where it was a lot like that. Body hits don't do much damage, so you've got to be real precise when spraying your Uzi into a crowd.
I feel like it's sort of like an alpha test for Zombie U. There's a lot of things that are similar, only that Zombie U did it right.
That's saying something, because 90% of everything Zombie U did wrong.
You know what? I never said this last week because it didn't come up, but, you know, Zombie U is everything that all these hardcore horror fans keep asking for. Oh, I don't want to have lots of ammo. I don't want to feel like I can die at any time and just have no effect. I can just spawn back at the beginning of the level. And it did all of that, and it still got trashed.
Yeah, I feel like Zombie U was the game that I have always wanted or whatever, except that they made the one thing I wanted to do, which was like hit zombies with a cricket bat, and made it not that fun. That's why what I've been playing is Dead Island Riptide some more, and that game is still excellent. I still enjoy walking into a pile of zombies, swinging a sword around, and just watching limbs and heads go flying like one of the end scenes of Kill Bill.
So do you have a special sword that you're fond of?
I don't yet. I have four different characters that I just switch between. I have this problem with RPGs where I just play everyone over and over and over again, and then I switch between them a million times, like, oh, I feel like using guns right now. Oh, I want to use swords right now. Hey, let me play as throwing guy. Oh, that new guy who kicks him really hard and sends him flying sounds kind of neat. And then in 3 hours playing, I'll only play, like, you know, 15 or 20, half an hour with each character, and they're all playing the exact same areas because I just went over them with another character, and then I end up getting burned out and just throwing the game away. So
wow, that's an interesting play style you have there.
It's really stupid, and I wish my brain did not do that, because it's miserable. But that game is still fun regardless, and the characters are different enough that I'm still interested whenever I do it. But, like, the difficulty in that game, from the first one, it's insane at times. Like, the whole, for some reason, I had this thought in my head, like, in the first one, I feel like you just ran in, and you swung around, and zombies just died, and they were no threat to you. Not the case in Riptide, and probably not the case in the first one. You start that game at level 15, even if you start a brand new character, and I think my highest level character is like level 40-something, maybe 45, and I'm to the point now where if you see a zombie who is holding a weapon, because I guess the excuse is they died with a weapon in their hand or whatever, every so often they will see you and they will like flail their arms and throw that weapon at you. If it hits you, you are dead. No matter what. No matter who you're playing. No matter how much life you have. And I'm not anywhere near max level. Like, if I see a crowd of 400 guys, and there's, like, 18 special butchers, and 3 thugs, and 5 chargers, and 1 walker with a knife in his hand, that's the threat. You have to shoot his arm off well before he gets in range. So, it is a little ridiculous at times. But, man, if you have to be paying attention more than I feel like you did in the first one. In the first one, I was just like skipping through the fields, jump kicking a zombie head every now and then. I feel like a lot of the places in this game are more crowded, like a flooded fishing village. If you turn this way, you're stuck between 2 shacks. If you turn that way, you're in deep water and can only move like 1 inch at a time, and they are all over you. I'm okay with it, though.
This does not sound fun.
It's still super fun, especially when you have cool weapons and when they come for you and you are prepared for it. Or you just go into rage mode, or you play as the new guy, and when they charge at you, you charge at them and hit the kick button to send them flying about 50 yards. One of my favorite, I have 2 favorite moments so far. One was a charging infected that I shot a sniper rifle into his kneecap, and his leg exploded, so he goes flying, like, does a forward roll in the air. He spins about twice, and then his head hits the ground and pops like a balloon. I thought that was pretty good. And then Logan, who was my favorite guy from the first one, there was one point where there was just this huge group of them. 2 infected come charging out, so I throw my weapon at him. It kills the first one and boomerangs back to my hand. That's his special ability or whatever. I throw it again at the second one, and it sticks in him and kills him. And as he flies by me in slow motion, I tap the button and pull the sword out of his chest again. And then I turn towards the group and throw it, but I miss the guy who I'm aiming at, and it hits the suicide guy or whatever in the middle, who blows up and kills all of them. It was like the greatest thing I've ever done in a game.
And was anyone there to see it happen?
No. Nope. I had no audience for this. It was just me. So maybe it's made up.
Then it didn't happen!
But that's pretty much all I've been playing. I know the game that I want to be playing is Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon. I don't know if anybody is like working on a review for that game already, but I had been excited about it anyway because Far Cry 3 was really excellent. And then if you guys have not seen the trailer for Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, I urge you to watch it as soon as we're done recording here, because it is the most absurd thing you've ever seen. It's so over the top. It's like, oh, coming in 2007, the apocalypse has had an apocalypse, and the only one who can help us is Rex Power Colt, a Mark IV cyber something or other. It's crazy, but really good.
Again, I want to repeat, available for voiceovers.
I could do, yeah, hey, hire me. I have the perfect voice and face for radio. That's it for me. What are you up to, Charles?
Well, I've been playing Xenoclash 2 and Sanctum 2.
Boring.
So, the first Xeno...
No, I'm just messing.
Yeah, I noticed your enthusiastic responses there. So, the first Xenoclash was an indie game that came out a few years ago. It's a first-person martial arts game where guns are rare, weapons are rare, and you're mostly punching people from the first-person perspective.
Okay, now you've got me. Now I'm in. I didn't know what this was. I called it boring. That was a little rude. Now I'm in. Go for it.
All right, so You know, so the first one, it had a couple of problems in that it was a, you know, it's a really short game. You could beat it in, I think, less than 4 hours. And also because it's a first-person brawler, it's essentially a game where you get punched in the back of the head every 10 seconds. You know, and the cool things about it were that it's set in this completely original fantasy world where you're a vaguely humanoid person who's in a village full of weird anthropomorphic animals, and you're all the descendants of a strange hermaphroditic being called Father Mother, and you live in this kind of barbaric, savage world that's completely unlike our own. So it's visually distinct, it has a completely weird storyline, and then you add in these strange game mechanics where you're punching people from the first person perspective, and it's an unusual experience, even though it has a lot of flaws. This started out as a PC game, but then they released it for consoles as well. And now Xenoclash 2 just arrived a few days ago, and it's a longer version with a more refined fighting system that it's not quite getting punched in the back of the head every 10 seconds, more like getting punched in the back of the head every minute if you're not really paying attention. And, you know, because it has this, I'm not really sure there's a word for it, but it's like biopunk, where the technology is all based around, you know, animals, so your guns look like they're made with, you know, primitive little animal teeth and bamboo or something. And when you do get a gun, it only has a few shots, it's hard to aim, and you're often better off just smacking someone with it than actually trying to use it as a projectile.
This sounds like a hardcore gamer's wet dream. Animals running around, not many bullets.
Yeah, there's definitely, you have to be a hardcore fan of first-person fighting, because it's a weird genre. And I generally do not like having to engage in melee combat when I'm in any kind of first-person view. This is a game that I didn't really care for Xenoclash 1, but Xenoclash 2 has built on its fighting system a little bit, and I'm starting to enjoy it a little more.
With all the animals running around in the first-person view, is there any chance that at some point you get to punch a shark in the nose in first-person?
Well, it's not really that there are animals running around, it's that they're anthropomorphic animal people, and I haven't fought a shark guy yet, but I did beat up an elephant guy recently.
Oh, man. This sounds good. Just punching animal people. It's like beating up furries. I always dream of that.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. So if you're hostile to furries, then, you know, I got no problem with furries. But if you're hostile to them, then, yeah, this is a game to play. And you can beat up some kind of, like, warthog guy right in the very first level.
Or if you've got something against elephants, it sounds like it might be good as well.
Yeah, those long-nosed, buck-toothed giants. I never cared for them. But one major warning about starting with Xenoclash 2, it picks up with a story right from where the first game left off, and the story, it's pretty much incomprehensible even if you played the first game, because the world is so alien and bizarre, but it is recommended that you try the first game just so you can know what the hell is happening in some vague, abstract sense.
I might have to try these games out. Every week I come in here, I've got to stop doing this show. I come in here and I end up walking out thinking, oh, where can I get some money? I just need to knock over a gas station on the corner to buy all the new games they talked about.
I think it says a lot about your personality that you'd be willing to steal money to play that game.
His intense hatred of shark people.
Yeah, I guess I could just dress my children up in animal costumes and punch them for free, right?
Wow, taking a few more steps down the morality scale there.
This is the man who a few weeks ago said that he hesitated to throw a baseball at an interracial couple.
That's true, what is that? What's wrong with me?
Apparently you're approaching the line from the wrong direction.
Yeah, and I like your use of the word hesitated there. I considered not throwing the baseball at the interracial couple, but then, and just for everyone listening, we're talking about a scene in a video game. He doesn't throw sporting equipment at actual interracial couples on the street.
Oh no, that was a completely different conversation. I'm talking about the actual interracial couple.
Oh, sorry. Do go on. Was one of them a shark person?
Yes, it was a great white shark person and an African elephant walking down the street, and I just threw a baseball. I couldn't help myself.
Where did I get the nerve?
Oh, God. Derailed. This is bound to happen every week, I think.
Well, let's re-rail back into talking about the preview build of Sanctum 2 that I'm playing.
Yes, I'm keen to hear this.
All right, so the original Sanctum, it was also an indie game. It's a first-person shooter, but it's also a tower defense game. So it's played from the first-person ground view of the character, but you can build walls and towers around you to defend a core from waves of incoming enemies. And the first Sanctum was pretty good. It didn't have much of a story. It was a little on the short side, some people would think. But Sanctum 2, which is still in preview code, it seems like it's going to be a little more elaborate. There are multiple playable characters with customizable loadouts. And I'm only a little ways into it, but it is shaping up to be a very fun experience. So if you found tower defense to be a little too boring and analytical and just want to actually take part in blasting some things, then the Sanctum games are a good choice.
Have you tried, I think it's called Orcs Must Die. I think it's the one I'm thinking of. There's two of them out now. And I feel like it might be something similar to what you're saying, where you build a bunch of traps like tower things, and then you control a character to go in there and kick ass at the same time.
Yeah, Orcs Must Die has a lot in common with the Sanctum series. Orcs Must Die, it's, you know, it's high fantasy, and it's also has a focus on melee. Whereas Sanctum 2, it's, you know, it's a science fiction, and, you know, it's a real, you know, shooter game where, you know, you're aiming down your iron sights and blasting at these waves of bad guys.
Yet another game that it sounds like I would like to try at some point, but I probably never will. I'll just never get the chance.
The original is always in kind of indie bundles, so if you really wanted to play it, it shouldn't be too difficult.
Yeah, the first one's out now, and the second one is coming out in the near future. And, you know, the code that I'm playing, it's still, you know, early stages of development with a few bugs in it. Ha! Bugs, because you fight waves of bugs.
It only got funnier as you explained it.
Thank you. It's the use of humor that I employed there that makes it extra funny as I explain the joke, because the second half of the sentence was unexplained because of the setup of the first sentence, which appeared to be a regular statement, while a twist was applied, resulting in an unexpected bit of humor.
Don't stop now, keep going.
Yeah, how long can you keep it up?
This dates back to the classic Greek interpretation of humor, where...
I would listen to a podcast that was just Charles telling us about why... He would tell a joke, he would explain the joke, and then tell us the origins of jokes and joking, where humor comes from and what makes a person laugh.
Well, actually, it's an evolutionary function.
Somebody cut his mic.
But back to the Sanctum series. That it seems like nowadays every game that has two-dimensional gameplay still ends up running on a 3D engine. So when you have a game like, any game, a tower defense that's hypothetically, you know, played on the 2D spectrum, you're still running it on a 3D engine. So with Sanctum, they kind of eliminate the middleman and they just let you run around in a 3D world, even though most of the gameplay is two-dimensional, like how you build your defenses and how most of the enemies run around. Your character, of course, can jump over walls, and sometimes you'll see aerial enemies. So it's a good way to add that little dose of third dimension to a traditionally 2D experience.
I like that the way people are coming up with different ways to sort of shake up the tower defense thing, because the idea of just, here comes some guys, I'm just going to play some towers, maybe they'll die, maybe they won't, it's been getting a little stale to me.
But you know, I'm starting to find that the people who are trying to do a twist on the tower defense genre are getting to the same space that just the tower defense genre was 3 years ago. I'm starting to expect the twists to a certain extent now.
Well, how many different ideas can you really have for, like, here comes some guys, set up some barriers, and maybe they'll crawl over them? For the record, I still don't think I've played better tower defense games than when I was just playing tower defense games that someone made as a map on the original StarCraft like 1,000 years ago. That might just be because you were doing it with 8 people at once, though, and everybody was covering like a different lane. Probably made it a little more exciting than just sitting there by yourself.
And well, it's good that they're adding in a more active and skill-based element rather than just, like you said, you know, put your defenses in and hope for the best. You know, with Orcs Must Die and Sanctum, you're at least using your personal skill to compensate for any flaws in your planning, rather than just sitting back and waiting for the inevitable to happen.
I like the idea of that, because there are some of those tower defense games. The one I'm thinking of is Pixel Junk Monsters or something, where by the time you get towards the end of that game, it seems like you have to put the specific towers in the specific places that they wanted you to, or you have no hope. Like, there's no... You come up with a strategy. It's like you figure out the plan they wanted you to have, or they will absolutely get through and kill all your children or whatever it is they do in that game. So it would have been nice. Yeah, maybe that's probably what I need in a tower defense game. I need to feel like I have some direct control. If I'm stupid and I just build level 1 arrow towers or whatever everywhere because I have no brain power, at least I can still grab a shotgun and kick ass, make a brave last stand in front of the children or whatever.
Yeah, a lot of strategy games use that mentality that the single correct strategy for each level is to use whatever new unit you just got and spam the hell out of it.
Yeah, I feel like that's a problem that some people have with the design of any sort of strategy thing. They're like, oh, everybody's just going to want to use the new thing we gave them, so just send a lot of enemies that are weak to the new thing.
Yeah, the first half of StarCraft 2 was pretty much, whatever new thing we just gave you, make a lot of them, because you're going to need them later.
StarCraft 2, yet another game I've been dying to play for years. Now there's 2 of them out, still haven't touched it. For a guy who claims that StarCraft 1 was his game that he played for years and years, I find that highly embarrassing.
Well, you'll have a new, fresh sense of style, and I'm sure that when you go online to play against other people, your unconventional new tactics will throw them and give you an edge in the online competitions.
That's what, I'll just jump right online, and while I'm going, all right, which are the units that you use to get the crystals? They will charge in with guys that cost 400 crystals each and just decimate my base.
but they'll be thinking, this guy could possibly be that dumb. He's up to something.
It's a plan on my part to get a horrible record so everyone thinks I'm terrible and then just come back out of nowhere and win it all.
I have been asking whether that's your plan since I met you.
That is my attitude in all facets of life. I just play dumb so people underestimate me.
And so far, you're not dead.
That's true, and that's all I can say. That's the extent of my successes. Hey, I'm hosting a semi-successful podcast. Maybe someone listens to this, besides me, when I'm editing the thing down. So,
well, my Twitter followers are listening.
Yes, there we go. Speaking of Twitter followers, if there are followers of this show, I would like to start doing a thing where we will be answering a little bit of reader mail each week at the end if we have some time. And so we've set up an email address. It's podcast@gamesreviews.com. You can send us an email with questions, comments, complaints. You could say my voice sounds stupid on the radio. It'll hurt my feelings, but that's fine. Whatever you want. but I'll probably bring that up again at the end. For now, how about if we move on to the topic of the week, gents? And the topic of the week this week is microtransactions. How do we feel about them? What do we think about them? The thing about microtransactions is it seems, well, as polarizing as anything in games, where you frequently see quotes from people where one developer says, microtransactions, people are over them. They're just going to get tired of being nickel and dimed. And then you get another developer who says, you know what? People are tired of paying money up front for games. They just want games for free, and then they just want to pay for what they want. It's like, you can't be right.
This topic's kind of valid tweak anyway, because I don't know whether you've heard about this over there, but it's kind of a big deal over here. Is that the government have just set up they're looking into the effects of free-to-play games on children. And the reason that they're doing this is because there's a lot of fucktards out there who decide to spend $3,000 on the Simpsons tapping game, whatever it's called, and then
Don't
blame
knock
Apple.
The Simpsons tap out. It's whacking day, damn it.
I'm sure the game's fantastic. It's the people that spend vast amounts of money on there and then are surprised that they've spent money on there.
Well, there was... Yeah, I'm constantly surprised when I log into my little Simpsons game and go into my friends' towns to find out just who has obviously spent $50 on premium stuff for their little imaginary Springfield.
There was a news report the other day in the Daily Mail, and it was the usual thing, you know, there was a rather fat-looking man with a mustache looking into the camera very, very obviously morally outraged. And next to him was his 13-year-old fat son, who looked very, very hard-pressed. And it's just a general shot for a UK newspaper front page. And the quote was, they'd interviewed the dad. And he went, "I think it's terrible that Apple haven't done more to stop children spending money on these games. It's basically tricking them into it. They don't tell you that you're spending money. You just spend money. He's only 13 years old. How is he supposed to know that he or he's spending money? He doesn't know the value of the pound." And honestly, that is almost word for word the quote. And he was blaming Apple for the fact that his son is slightly retarded and doesn't understand that you are spending $1 means that he is spending $1.
I like that he would blame Apple at all when, if you're going to make a purchase in a game, first you have to find the place to make a purchase. Then you have to say, "I want to purchase it." Then the thing comes up and says, "Are you sure you want to purchase it?" Then you have to put in your password to purchase it. And if you don't want to do any of that, in the settings, you can just set it up to not allow in-app purchases at all.
Yes, it's poor parenting not using the built-in security features of their product.
Having looked at the kid, I'm kind of feeling that he thought the donuts were real. Just putting that out there.
Now, there are some that are sneaky and underhanded. I remember hearing about one game where, if I remember right, it was something about a fishing game. And they have a couple of these fishing games on there where, like, you throw a hook in the water and you just tilt your device to try and avoid fish for as long as possible. And then when you finally hit one, it reels the hook back in, you know, at high speed, and you try to grab as many fish as you want or something. I'm not sure if that's exactly what this game was, but basically there was some game where for every golden fish you caught, it like charged you $1. And it told you that, but if you're a little kid, it wasn't asking if you wanted to buy some golden fish. It was just like little kids are clicking on golden fish, and for every one, $1 is deducted from their parents' account.
Yowza.
That one I'm pretty sure the developers got in trouble for, because that is absurd.
Yeah, there was a Smurf Village game that was particularly horrible in this. If you started the game up, you get about an hour of play out of it, and then you'd reach a point where you've reached the limits of your Smurf Village, and you can build a bridge to a nearby, you know, Smurf Island on the other side of the river, but that'll take 3 days of real time, or you can buy 99 cents worth of Smurf berries right now!
Trust the fuck Smurfs.
Yes, these Smurf bastards, they created this system where it was obviously intended to, you know, spike a child audience into spending that $1 investment right at the beginning of the game. And, you know, the fact that you had to wait 3 days for your Smurf bridge to build to the expand your town, it was just so cruel, because you can imagine a kid downloading this and playing it in the car on a long trip, and then an hour into it, Dad, I have to wait 3 days before I can build my Smurf Village.
I'm a little embarrassed to say that I played Smurf Village when it first came out. I was like, man, the graphics on this are so cool. It's stupid that I even downloaded it, because I don't care about the Smurfs. I don't think I've ever seen a Smurf TV show. I mean, is it a cartoon? I don't even know what the hell a Smurf is, except for I know that it's a little blue guy in white, and you occasionally see them around. So it's like we downloaded this game. We're playing it. And it's like, oh, we're building a little village. The graphics are so cool. It's like a painting or whatever. And it was like, yeah, the same. Just like Charles says, after an hour, they're like, you can wait 3 days for this bridge. And I was like, are you kidding me? And then they price it just right. They're like, just pay $1 and the bridge is done. It's like, okay, $1. What's $1? Bridge is done. Now you can build more buildings, but now that you're getting to the high-level buildings, each of those takes 5 days. Do you want some more berries? And it's like, you have got to be kidding me. I know my wife and I spent some money on that game. I don't think it was that much, but it was more than we ever should have. And then by the time you build all these buildings, you realize, oh, now that all the buildings are built, I don't have anything left to do. Like,
did
the
developers keep adding new content?
I assume they did, but I deleted that shit immediately. So I paid them my money literally for nothing.
Yeah, I mean, if I can praise the people that are doing the Simpsons game, they are releasing a constant stream of new content for it. So it's the kind of thing that if you bought the game and you paid $1 or $5 at the beginning, it does kind of reward you for months.
See, I've seen that Simpsons game a bunch of different times, and I've thought about buying it, and I always think, no, it's going to be the Smurfs all over again.
No, they're actually well aware of it. They actually have notes where, you know, Mayor Quimby is talking to Fat Tony, and he says, the person playing this game will build whatever we tell them to and pay whatever exorbitant prices we demand.
That's pretty good. I like that. I'll finally download it.
But since we're talking about microtransactions and how this works, you know, I've given money to those developers a couple of times. And when I say given money to the developers, it's not really that I'm buying their premium content because of the value of the content. It's that I feel like I'm on the honor system, that I've enjoyed their game for months. So, of course, you know, I'll pay them a couple of dollars every few months just as a reward for making a thing that I enjoy. And it's not, you know, it's not that I'm, you know, buying the content, it's that, you know, I'm rewarding them for making a product that I made because I feel like it's the ethical thing to do, and I know they can't stay in business unless somebody is buying some of this content.
I feel like that's the upside of microtransactions. That's what I really like, where if you get a free game and you enjoy it, you just pay them some money for things, and, you know, they make what they make on it, and it's kind of nice, rather than, I mean, it sort of ties in with what we were talking about last week, where it's just going to be the opposite of pirating. They'll just give you the game for free and then charge you for things. If you don't like it, well, you never had to pay anything in the first place.
I'm surprised it's even an issue to a certain extent. People seem to have really kind of taken against the idea of microtransactions. And the game that you mentioned earlier, perhaps not the Smurfs, but the fishing one, is kind of the example of that where it goes too far. Because, I mean, it comes to a point where you're either going to pay for the game or, you know, for whatever you're paying for, or you're not. You're either going to delete it or you're going to keep on playing. And you're never forced to do one or the other. I play a lot of kind of MMORTS games. I imagine they're a lot like Smurf Village. And you can play for about an hour, maybe as much as 2 or 3 hours. And then you're going to either have to wait for something to happen or you're going to have to pay and make it faster. And that seems like a fair choice to me.
Well, there's a really bad mentality going around in the dawn of the free-to-play movement where they had something called whales. And a whale is the obsessive player that spends $100 a month buying the premium content. And if 2% of your players are based, 2% of your player base are these obsessive players that are giving you hundreds of dollars, then that was a good thing in the developer's mind. And the other, you know, 95% of the people playing the game are just there to give the whales somebody to play with. And it had a very exploitative, slot machine, compulsive attitude about it that developers were very overt about manipulating and exploiting this particular class of customer.
I think there are some that will specifically try to play on your nostalgia, too, just to get you to spend a dollar. Like the, have you guys heard about Final Fantasy All the Bravest?
Yes.
That game is...
It's
vile. Luckily, I was like, ooh, a new Final Fantasy game made for iPad or whatever. Maybe I'll buy it. I was lucky that I read about it because all that game is like a series of battles or whatever where you can have probably 30 or so Final Fantasy characters on the screen at once, and they're all like cool characters that you've probably heard of and whatever. And they just stand there, and the monsters stand on the other side. But there's no strategy to it. You just rub your finger over where your heroes are standing, and as soon as your finger touches them, they just jump forward and do a pre-planned attack, whatever it is that their class happens to make them do or whatever. There's no game to it. It's literally just like watching pictures of Final Fantasy characters, and you have to pay through the nose for the privilege.
Now that's the slot machine attitude, where you're just constantly getting, oh, I've got points, I've got coins, I've got blinking lights, yay, I'm winning, even though I spent a dollar to earn that 75 cents.
Right.
But even then, I mean, people have chosen to download the game and play it. I've heard terrible things about it, and I wouldn't recommend anyone play it, and I wouldn't play it myself, but the fact that it's out there, I don't want to get to a place where we say that developer is not allowed to release this crap.
No, hey, if you can sucker enough people to pay money for nothing, then good for you. I think, isn't that the American way? Find a sucker and fleece him for all he's worth.
Well, I agree completely. I'm something of a libertarian, so if people want crap, give them crap. And the rest of us, our goal is to show these morons that there are good games out there that they can play.
I do think that there's a mentality at the minute where certain... they're probably only a vocal minority, but there are certain people who think that gaming should be exactly as it was in the early 90s, and that there should only be teenage or early 20s males who play games that no one's ever heard of, that probably aren't all that good, and that they have to be of a certain quality and of a certain vagueness. And I don't like how closed off these people seem to want the gaming industry to go. They seem to think that would solve all our problems if we just got rid of DLC and casual games and Facebook games and Activision.
Well, I think that a lot of this is starting to work itself out. We've seen the Zynga bubble has repeatedly popped and slightly recovered, only to pop again. So it does seem like quality is slowly winning out as new customer bases come in and are just learning what kind of games are out there.
I know right now the two games that jump to mind immediately on the microtransaction thing, because my wife and everybody I know have been playing them on Facebook and iPad. There's one called Candy Crush Saga, I think. It's just Bejeweled with pieces of candy instead of jewels, as far as I can tell. And the other one's called Bubble Witch Saga or something. It's by the same people, and it's basically like Bubble Bobble with sort of a pachinko influence, in that if you pop the right bubbles and they fall down, they'll bounce off some spiders and then go into buckets like Peggle or something, and you get bonus points. And it's like they're the kind of games where it's totally free, but they just give you like five turns or whatever. You can, you know, you play five rounds and then you have to wait like a half an hour for a turn to recharge. And for the most part, I think that's fine. Like, if you're the kind of person who can just sit there and you play five goes and then you go, all right, I'll just wait a couple hours and I'll try it again. But they sit there and every time you run out, they're like, you don't have any more lives. You can harass your friends on Facebook and hope that they just give you some, or you can pay some money for it. Or, and here's the option that I saw specifically on the Bubble Witch game that I thought was kind of funny. It said, you can buy just unlimited goes for $80. You just pay $80 once, and then you never, ever have to worry about running out of lives again. And I kind of laughed to my wife. I said, oh, why don't you just pay $80, and then you'll be able to just play it forever. And she said, I think if there was no risk to it, like if I didn't have to risk the waiting, it wouldn't be exciting. I would pay the $80, and then I'd just quit, because it wouldn't be like, if you lose, you can't play for a while. So I wonder how many people...
$2 on Steam for Bejeweled or a similar game, and just outright buy the game $10 or wait for it to go on sale for $2.
Right. I wonder how many people have exercised the option in games like that where it's a limited amount of turns and they just pay a huge chunk, because $80, I mean, that is absurd. And then turn around and go, now that there's no risk to it, I feel like I'm not as excited to play it. Because they both are the type of games that, in my opinion, you would get burned out in a hurry if you just tried to sit down and play it for 1,000 hours. But because they limit you, it's like sort of a manufactured scarcity of turns that once makes you want to spend a little bit of money to get one more turn, or you could just wait. But the idea of spending huge money to play forever, I don't know who that would appeal to.
But you know, I mean, it's slightly different thing, but the MMORTS games that I've played, there are options to buy enough points. They're worth about 2.5 grand.
Why? Just tell me
I
why.
cannot
Why would you do
imagine
it?
I cannot imagine anyone going, "Huh, well, I've got a spare 3 grand. I think I'll spend it on this MMORTS game." You know, but the option's there. It kind of makes me think people must be doing it. Either that or they want people to think that other people are doing it, and so that it's not all that strange. I don't really know.
Or it makes the lower price break seem perfectly reasonable. It's like, well, you've got to be crazy to spend $1,000, but ooh, there's 100. That seems perfectly reasonable now.
I like
It
the
always makes me
idea.
laugh because as
No
it
good.
always makes me laugh because as you spend more, you kind of save more, and by the time you're spending 2.5 grand, you're getting 500 points free, $500 worth of points free, and you're just kind of sitting there thinking, you know what, that compared to the lower ones, that's actually really good value.
Yeah, you're practically earning $500 by spending that $1,000 on your imaginary gold.
That, see, that's the thing. That's the kind of stuff I don't like, is buying items and things. I like the idea of somebody playing this game, though, and they wake up and they think, man, today's the day I'm going to go buy my car so then I can finally get a job and maybe meet a lady. And then they sit down at their computer and go, wait a minute. If I just spend that $2,000 on these, I can get $500 worth of bonus points extra. And they throw their job application in the trash and they just buy those points instead of the car.
Well, just think about how all the ladies that will admire his well-dressed gnome sorcerer.
There's nothing ladies love like a pixelated man in like a purple robe with some magical runes on it.
And you know, you can put guild leader on your resume, and that'll really impress people at job interviews.
You're making it sound good, Charles. Maybe I, instead of buying a car, I should have bought all these points for these games.
Yeah, you should have saved your Smurf berries back when you had a chance.
That's what I want them to do for microtransactions. I want to be able to hoard Smurf berries. I want to earn them through the game, and then I want to be able to sell them myself to other people. So I can just have a stockpile, and then when the price is high, I can sell them all off.
Okay. Everyone knows that there's only one Smurf lady, so Smurf berries probably aren't the best one to invest in if you want sex.
All right, your homework assignment this week is going to be logging, downloading the Smurf game again and checking out your old Smurf village to see how it's progressed without you in the last 2 years, and then report back to us next week on it.
I expect
Drug
death and
rings,
destruction.
prostitution.
Yeah, there's just Smurfette standing there with torn fishnet stockings, and Papa Smurf is smoking a hash pipe. No, that game, I'm pretty sure I've programmed that iPad so that if I even look at that game on the App Store, it'll just self-destruct in my hands and send shards of hot glass into my face.
You know, on the topic of microtransactions, have you guys played, I think it's called Four Picks, One Word?
That is one that I have seen my wife play,
No,
yes.
I have not.
It's huge for some reason. There are four pictures, and it helps you to guess one word. And there is the option of paying to get clues. You get so many each time you successfully guess a word, and then you can pay for more. And it is just taking advantage of stupid people. There was one girl on Facebook the other day who put up a picture of there's another game where it's like logos or silhouettes of famous people, and it was obviously Fidel Castro. And she was asking people if it was Hitler. So she eventually went ahead and paid so that she could work out who Fidel Castro was. She probably still doesn't know. But it does work. If they the amount of people who don't know who people are in these games, the first thing they do is go for their credit card. And it gives them so many clues, and it makes them feel really smart for a couple of levels, and then they pay some more.
My thought is
It's
for a
terrible,
game like
really.
that, they should, especially if it's a person and it's somebody important like that, if you pay the money, they should say, okay, yeah, we'll tell you who it is, but we're going to lock you into this app for the next 5 minutes while we give you a little history lesson about this person. Like, you are going to learn who this is because you paid that money.
But you know, that that four picks, one word game is ridiculous anyway. When you get to the hard levels, it's like you'll see a couple cuddling on a beach and two puppies looking at one another, and there'll be other things in a similar vein, and then the answer will be togetherness, and you're somehow supposed to guess that.
Yeah, I think Ash was playing
and
a
you
game.
You have to guess the ness on the end. You can't just think together.
Yeah, it has to be specific. Ash was playing that game, and she got to the point where it was like, it was just nonsense. Between the two of us, we could not come up with it, and she was just like, delete. It was not even like, maybe I'll buy a clue. It's just like, forget it. I think that's where
that sounds a lot like.
Go ahead.
Well, that sounds a lot like the Rosetta Stone language software. They'll show you these four pictures that are supposed to indicate, you know, the abstract concept of before and after in Hungarian. And you know, if it's a really obscure concept in a language that doesn't really work the way that English does, you know, you can spend. You can just sit there and stare at this, trying to figure out why are they trying to convey what? How does the fly? And you know, and then it ends up you're just trying to learn what in front of in Japanese is. And you know, in Japan they have one word for in front of.
I think sometimes I wonder if the like, especially on the iOS App Store and stuff, if there are so many games that are just free now, and then they are supported with microtransactions. If it's just going to end up like messing everything up because there are just so many of them. Like I know I've gotten to the point a handful of times where I'll be playing this free game and it gets to the point where they want me to pay money and I just go, nope, I'll download a different free game where I don't have to pay yet.
I'm pretty sure that a lot of people are using that exact premise that they just download the free demo and play it until they're done and then download the next free demo. And I think we've been doing that for years now on home consoles and maybe even PC as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's not new. You go back to kind of, I remember downloads.com and downloading some horrible virus adult demo shareware. You'd play it for 30 minutes, your computer would explode. You know, I mean, it's not new, and I'd play it for half an hour, and then I'd go on to something else, and all the games were dreadful, much like I'm sure most on the iOS are. You know, but I can't get that offended about microtransactions because we've come a long way. In the first days of the MMOs at the end of the 80s, you'd be spending kind of, I think it was $8 a move. People would regularly spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month just to play some crappy MMO. It just goes to show that there are people out there that will pay for anything.
Well, it's good that most MMO developers now at least have a $15 gold plan or premium plan, so that if you are some kind of microtransaction hog, you have the option of just getting that regular subscription rate where you get all the content for free, rather than nickel and diming yourself into spending $20 or $50 a month every month on this stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting MMOs because there's kind of a big transition going on where no one can support a subscription model anymore, so people are looking for other ways of doing it, and everyone's really excited about kind of the Guild Wars model where you spend so much up front and then you can just play the game indefinitely. And they don't really take into account the fact that most people probably pay more for Guild Wars than they would if they just subscribed to World of Warcraft for 3 months. But, you know, on the other side of that, there are a lot of free-to-play games now that are done by microtransactions. And, you know, a lot of them, if you're not in, then you're trying to help people get in to it who may pay. Sort of first missions are, hey, advertise this game on Facebook and then you'll level up.
Yeah, that's an insidious form of marketing that they do, which I never really cared of, but it helped build the Zynga enterprise by using the pester your friends mentality and give your friends free things if they just play this stupid little game and help you harvest your turnips.
Well, I think we've probably run long again this week, so how about if we wrap it up on microtransactions and all other gangs games for this time, gentlemen?
Thank you for contributing so much, Joe.
Oh, yes, and we have to hear what's been going on in your Smurf village for the last couple of years next time we meet.
Yeah, I will probably not be doing that, but it is a nice thought. Well, thanks for coming, gents. I will see you next week. For now, we are out.